Hello everyone. Welcome to Yarndale 2020. I want to thank you all for being here and just want to acknowledge the great efforts that the Yarndale committee have gone to create something for all of us this weekend. So thank you for joining us here. We are in the Shapiers Lounge and we are having some really great chit chat today. Okay, on to the session. We are joined with the very lovely Deborah Bradley. I'm so thrilled to have you here today. I love chatting with you.
Hello,
Welcome.
everyone. Hello, hello, Matt.
Welcome. It's so great to see you here today.
Lovely to see you too. Lovely to be here. Lovely to be part of Yarndale. It's obviously we're missing the cattle shed, but it's lovely to be here.
We were actually just having a natter, weren't we, before this began, and I asked you how of course lockdown and stuff has been. I actually like to just go there before we go way back. How
All
has lockdown been, and how have you been coping? Have you been crafting or doing much to keep sane in that sense, craft wise?
right. Yes, a little bit here and there. I've actually ridiculously seemed to have developed RSI in lockdown. I think just too many too many emails and phone messages keeping in touch with people. So I haven't done as much as I would have done otherwise. But I have still managed a little bit. Also the other thing is that just before we went into lockdown, we got kittens. So the everything has to now be kept under lock and key practically.
Gosh, I can imagine. Well,
Yeah.
actually, not. Yeah.
One of the things that I was saying to Matt a while ago is that I'm terrible for starting things and not finishing things. I just get really excited by new things, and I will go back to things and finish things, but it takes me quite a while, quite often. And this morning I thought, oh, what have I got? What can I have a look at? And I realised that I'd still got squares that I haven't sewn together from the last dance on the beach towel from years ago. And so I thought, oh, I'll just get those out. And like
Let's have a look into that.
here, but I love the colours of this curl. Everyone at work takes the mickey out of me because everything is on a range from palest of duck egg blue to the darkest of teals and blues
Love
and greens and kind
it.
of
Are
nothing else.
they your colours?
They really are. Nothing else gets a look in, even though I do love other colours too, but it's all here. But yes, this one I had to rescue this morning because it was in the mouth of a black and white furry beast who was just carrying it down the stairs ago. I'll have this one. Thanks very much.
Look what I found.
Yeah.
Do you take that as a sign, a sign from the universe to get back on the project?
I think it is.
Do you
I
think?
think
I
it
think
is.
maybe it could be, you know, it
Yeah.
could be.
I think so.
We've all certainly got our fair share of kind of stashed projects, so you're certainly not alone. I think it's a habit that I think a lot of us have, especially when there's new things coming out and you're like, oh, I'll start that, and then you get busy and.
Well, that's it, isn't it? And there's so many different yarn ranges all the time, and so many different things coming out. You just think, oh, I'll just have a look at that.
Just dabble a bit in that, give that
Yeah.
a go, have a look. Yeah, totally. So Deborah, I wanted to before we jump all over the place, would you mind just to share with everyone exactly what you do? Because you've got, well, you do so much, but one of the big things, and the big things that I personally want to talk about, is your involvement with some of the biggest magazines, craft and crochet magazines around. So you've been involved with Simply Crochet, Simply Knitting, Knitter Magazine. Would you mind to just explain to everyone kind of what your role was, or is within these magazines?
Yeah, absolutely. So in back in 2005 we launched Simply Knitting, which it's been a big year for us this year actually, because we've had the 200th issue of Simply Knitting.
Oh wow, congratulations.
Thank you. 150th issue of The Knitter, and the 100th issue of Simply Crochet as well.
Oh, it's a birthday year. Wow.
It really is. And you know, it's fantastic that that readers and crafters have, knitters and crocheters have been interested for so long and are still coming to us really. So we decided 2005 that there was room in the market for a knitting, in another knitting magazine, because knitting was already out there, but I think at that point it was I think it was bi-monthly perhaps. Anyway, we don't tend to do magazines that are not 13 issues a year. So we launched Simply Knitting, and then obviously had quite a lot of success with that, and then launched The Knitter in 2009, I think. And then, you know, again, it's a question of keeping an eye on the market and seeing what's out there, what people are doing, what we see, you know, obviously these days, the social media as well, which was around in 2005, but not in the same
way. Yeah, in a different way, huh?
Yeah, and you forget how quickly these things have grown, really. So it was, you know, a question of working with colleagues and my publishers, and you know, obviously lots of different designers, to put all these things together.
Yeah, wow. So what exactly is or was your role at the time when you launched these magazines? Like, what did your job involve?
So as an editor, you are doing lots and lots of different things actually, because you manage the team, so you're likely to have I think that knitters and crocheters are maybe a little bit more aware of this, but when you have you know, some people, when you say, oh, I'm a magazine editor, they think it's like the Devil Wears Prada, you know.
You're playing the Meryl Streep character.
Yeah.
Emily.
Not really like that.
Yeah.
But people do tend to think that you have enormous teams, and you've got a PA, and you have, you know, like 30 people all scurrying off and looking in the yarn cupboard and all this, you know, and usually the teams are really small. Generally from about 3 to 6 or 7 people.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, you're putting a magazine together generally in 19 working days or less.
Because you're doing 13 a year as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
So it's a fairly swift process. And of course, with the yarn industry, there's usually autumn, winter and spring, summer launches. Which is great, because now we have the relationships where we'll know what's coming ahead of time.
Yeah,
I suppose, so that you can plan better. And obviously, we're, you know, relatively well known now, so that designers come to us, which is great. But you know, at first, finding people who can design in the time scales to the accuracy that you need. And of course, you know, nowadays we have kind of a small bank of people who work with us in the office, and people outside who'll check the patterns. But it's, you know, obviously there are thousands of variables in those patterns. So it's kind of, it's managing that process where you're managing commissioning designers to make stuff for you, managing the art editors and the production editors, of people who are working on the InDesign documents in the office to or not in the office these days. We've all had to adapt to working slightly differently.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And of course, you know, there's photo shoots that need planning, and
your role as editor, you would do all of that.
So you're basically overseeing everyone else, and you know everyone else's jobs are equally important, because without any one of those people on the team, you're sunk, really.
Yeah, sure. So it's really a team effort.
Yeah, it really is. And that's part of the thing that I enjoy most about it, actually, is you get to know people really well, because you're all working under quite a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And, you know, you work really closely together to put out the best magazine that you possibly can.
Yeah. Your involvement in the magazine, how did that come about then? Do you have a background in kind of the magazine industry, or do you come from, is it the craft design industry you come from? Like,
well, a little bit of both, in that I've been working in craft magazines since 1999. So, you know, didn't start off as an editor, started off as a production assistant. So you're then you're doing a lot of the writing for the magazine, you're arranging giveaways with companies, you're writing the news sections to what's going on. So there's all sorts of things where you kind of start. And you know, other people start in different areas of business, of course, but that's where I came from. So I was working on needlecraft magazines for quite a while, cross stitch magazines, and then in 2004 my publisher said, how would you like to launch a papercraft magazine? And I'd been working as an editor for a while by then, but I didn't know anything about papercraft. So it's always a steep learning curve with these things. We had about 12-13 weeks to launch papercraft, so it was a little bit longer. So that wasn't too bad. So I worked on that for a little while, and then my publisher said, how would you like to launch a knitting magazine? And and actually, we'd been a few of us had been lobbying for a knitting magazine for a long time, because we were all knitters. And I shouldn't speak for the others, they could do all sorts of crocheting and designing, knitting, you know, knitwear patterns and all sorts of things, but I was kind of just a knitter, if you like. It's sort of from that point of view, at least I knew what was going on.
Yeah, sure. We touched on this briefly before the conversation today started. Just to share with everyone else, how important is it to have the knowledge of the craft? So you mentioned, for example, the papercraft magazine, and you didn't know much about it before.
And it's really important to get to know quite a lot about it as quickly as you possibly can. And I think it always helps when you are editing a magazine, if you are really enthusiastic about that craft. And, you know, obviously, as I said, I knew quite a lot about knitting before, but I've learned so much about it since. There's still more to learn, because knitting and crochet are such complex and interesting crafts, and you know, people are developing perhaps new things or new ways of doing things, and or discovering things and publicizing them all the time. It is important to know something about the craft, for a craft magazine, but at the same time you have lots of transferable skills from whichever magazines you're working on.
Sure, yeah.
Because even though each magazine runs slightly differently because of the craft and because of the number of people who work on it, and the people themselves that work on it, and you know, obviously people have different skills that you might decide to use in different ways. But the magazine craft part of it is really important. You need to be able to write cover lines, decide how you're going to talk to people, whether it's on the newsstand or whether it's people that subscribe, how you're going to talk to people about what you've got in the magazine, so that there's hopefully you can be communicating what's interesting about that magazine and why they might want to buy it. Because, you know, we appreciate they're not cheap. And we try very hard to give, you know, as good value as we can, I suppose. But yeah, those skills of being able to work on pages, to have a concept, I suppose, of what you think is right for the magazine is really important. So that goes all the way.
That really impacts it hard, doesn't it? If you are a crafter in that sense, to know what the impact would be as a crafter, not as an editor.
Yes.
It kind of works hand in hand, yeah.
Yeah, it really does. And in a funny kind of way, you, as an editor, what you want to be doing is working with experts on your magazine so that there are people on the magazine that know probably more than you do about the techniques, about the, you know, the things going on, because you can't do everything yourself. Yeah. And it's then kind of harnessing their talents and making that work.
Yeah, sure. What's your favorite aspect of the job? Because it sounds like it's a whole umbrella of things that you're managing, right?
Yeah,
favorite aspect.
That's quite hard, I think.
Sure.
Personally, because I love language as well, so I've got a proofreading background before I started working in magazines, so which doesn't necessarily mean that there are never any mistakes, obviously, but I really like working on the pages at the end of the process, because there may well be pages that have been put together but you won't necessarily have seen them until maybe a couple of weeks in.
Okay.
So that's great, because then you can see how the team have worked on those pages, and you can think, well, okay, can we make this a little bit better, that a little bit better, you know, if there's time as well. It's that, and working with the team, I suppose, to like we said before, to make sure that they're able to use their talents and they feel fulfilled in their jobs.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is, of course, massively important, is it, to have the team, the collaboration, and everyone feel that they're fulfilling a role to the best of their ability and supporting it. Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, of course, there's always also working with designers, because that's so exciting from a creative point of view, seeing what people come up with and how they interpret, perhaps. In we usually send out like a trend mood board a couple of times a year, or a few times a year, and seeing how they interpret perhaps those fashion trends into yarn trends, and what's going on in the yarn industry as well is really interesting.
How do you it's a quick question coming up for me personally. You mentioned, of course, back when the magazine started, social media was around, but not to the extent that it is today. You know, like, everyone seems to have at least a social media platform, whether it be Facebook, Instagram, or how do you keep in line with the trends when your magazines, you know, your magazine, the creation of a magazine is a process, whereas social media is quite sudden. Things can change dramatically from day to day of what's hot and what's not. How do you keep up with that trend?
It can be quite tough, because something might come up where you know you're not going to be able to get that mentioned in a magazine for the next 3 weeks at least.
Yeah.
So then we might try and do something with that, excuse me, on our own social media.
Okay, yeah.
So we usually have platforms across, it's generally Facebook and Instagram that we use the most of. We are on Twitter as well, but you know, Instagram is such a massive thing at the moment. And obviously magazines are quite a visual medium as well.
Yeah. Yep.
So we do try and have something going on Instagram all the time. But another thing that we have now is we have a cross platform, cross craft website called gathered.how, and that we're able to react, that has a team putting it together now, and we're obviously able to react a little bit faster on there.
Yeah. So just to explain what Gathered is, because I've looked at the website a fair bit over the last weeks, but would you mind to explain exactly what it is? It's kind of, from what I'm understanding, a place where all of the craft areas can be kind of showcased.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. That. So all of the crafts that we showcase in the magazines, and some others actually, where people either have an interest or there's things going on. So the main sections, you can see what's going on in the magazines. We'll showcase some material from the magazines. Mm. Also, it's a showcase for designers across all different crafts, where they, if we've worked with someone in the industry, we can put a page up for them to tell people a little bit about what they're doing. So it's another great place for that as well. So there's lots of free content on there across lots of different crafts. So yeah, there's lots going on, and you can, as I said, I think you can go and have a look what's going on with the magazines there as well.
Yeah. So just the website is it gathered.com?
No, it's gathered.how, which is, we've used Gathered for various things over the years, and that was one of the sites available, so
we picked
that one, and it makes it, there's a lot of tutorial content on there as well, actually, so it makes sense from a how to do things.
Yeah, let me just pop that down, and then everyone can have a little look. Also make a spelling mistake.
That typing.
There we go. Good. Yeah. So I'd recommend everyone having a look at that. As I said, I've had a little nose around that over the past weeks, and it's a great resource. It's really fantastic. So aside from the all of the work you do with the magazines, what's your craft?
Oh, I'd have to say knitting, really. So I've been knitting one way or another since I was a child. And, like a lot of people, I think I sort of came back to it as a teenager.
Yeah, yeah.
And learned how to do a few more things. But I also learned to crochet probably about 6 years ago now. And I tried to learn to crochet for years off and on without having really given it a proper go, I suppose. And I could do a chain, and I thought, oh, this is just silly, why can't you, what I couldn't get over was how to get from the chain to the next stage of how to read your stitches, where to go, that kind of thing. It's all in a nutshell has been brilliant. Actually, it's been brilliant through Sheepies it's been so helpful. But anyway, sorry, back to what I was going to say about learning to crochet. So I was at a show where we were with the magazines, with a stand, and I happened to say to one of the designers that we've worked with, oh, you know, can you show me? And she was very lovely and said, yes, of course. But then she turned from this lovely person that I know into this absolutely terrifying teacher. So I learned how to crochet and how to do about three different stitches in about 15 minutes.
Out of absolute fear.
Absolute terror. So, which is absolutely brilliant because then of course I could do it. But the ridiculous thing was as well that I was manning the stand by myself over lunch. It was quite a big stand. And this lady came along and said, I can't crochet. Can you show me?
Not only did you learn 15 minutes prior to that, were you suddenly teaching people?
Absolutely. So I thought, well, yes. While it's fresh in my mind, here you are. So I'm sure the poor lady hopefully found someone with a bit more knowledge after that. But she left the stand being able to do some trebles. So I was quite proud.
I just love that. You know, that's the thing at the end of the day, right? It's also the connecting over it, like regardless of if it's right or wrong or, you know, doesn't matter. So out of crochet and knitting is your number one spot. Do you design in the
I don't these days. I have done a little bit of knitting design. Hardly any, and I've done a tiny bit of crochet design as well because
Google did tell me that.
Actually. Not very much. But when we were launching magazines, particularly Simply Knitting, because that was a launch in 6 weeks, which was just ridiculous. And we had about 3 months to do Simply Crochet, so it was easier. But, you know, you are kind of thinking, I haven't got time to ask somebody to do this at the beginning.
Yeah.
So it is quite useful to be able to do something, even if it's really simple.
So really a case of like, we're short on time, I'll do it myself.
Absolutely. And of course you then have complete control over what's going on as well. Because you know, it's, and in a funny sort of way, that's actually quite useful because, you know, what one thing I haven't really talked about is connection with the readers and crafters, because I can see you here as well. I always kind of, I suppose, think about people as being included in that process. Yeah. And then I sort of forget that actually I haven't actually said anything. But, you know, of course, the readers and what readers want to see is really important. And one of the things that we are always a little bit conscious of with some of the magazines is that we are aiming at beginners and intermediates and people who know what they're doing very well, thanks. So you want to be able to, with Simply Knitting and Simply Crochet, we try and have a fairly broad range of projects. So that even if you're if you're a good knitter or there's something in there that you can just do quickly that you can, you know, just give as a gift or and then obviously with the knitter we don't kind of cater to beginners at all in there, really. Obviously everyone can have a go. It's more about the taste level, but it's never a bad thing to have beginners that kind of, to retain that point of view, I suppose, as well. You know, from the point of view of, I'm not the best knitter in the world and I'm not the best crocheter in the world, far from it, but that means that if we are looking at projects and looking at how to plan an issue, I can say, oh well, that's something that I can learn.
I see. Yeah.
So, you know, and as I said, you've got the more technical people on the team who can do anything. So it's you know, you want to give the readers that already know you what they want to see or try to. But also you're trying to cater for people who are completely new to the craft as well.
Kind of inspiring all areas. A question that kind of relates to this, but also it popped up in the chat that Sue asked, like who sets the trends, and kind of adding on to that, how do you gauge what the readers want to be seeing, or like how do you gauge that? How do you keep track?
as you were saying about the social media before, you know, that's a lot of it, because you see what people are liking, what they're coming up with, what people are making.
Yeah.
So I think that there's several things that come into this, because obviously you have young companies like Sheepies who are looking, sorry, I'm saying that terribly wrong. We have a bit of a joke about it in the office. I know it's kind of more shapish than so, you know, people who are setting those trends because they're planning their yarns years before they come out and are available. So there's that, the trends about perhaps using more natural fibers, more ecologically friendly fibers, so that there's those trends that are perhaps wider trends that you're seeing terms of what's happening in the world generally anyway. Then you have the yarn industry trends. Then you have designers who, and it's a funny thing where trends do seem to have a bit of a life of their own as well. So you may well at the same time have several designers coming to you with similar ideas, not because they're seeing what each other are doing at all, but it's just that zeitgeist thing where they are coming up with the same sort of idea. The turnover is really quick with social media. That does seem to be something that is changing a little bit. But there's always going to be yarn trends that's kind of separate outside of that as well, where you know, perhaps people are deciding that this year they want to work with solids, or this year they want to work with semis or speckled, or that kind of thing. Or, you know, maybe this is the year that everyone makes socks.
Is there ever a time, this is all from me asking that, has there ever been a time where the anticipation of what the trend is going to be has not been, and you've gone off track?
Oh, that's a really good
question. Has that ever happened?
I think sometimes it can be hard to get the timing right.
Yeah, sure.
So you might actually still see those trends, but perhaps you might be too early with them.
Ah, okay.
It's an interesting thing where trends have a bit of a journey, I suppose, through from when people are coming up with them and thinking, oh, that would be nice, that's a good idea, to when they become more mainstream.
Yeah.
And then, you know, over the other side where people think, oh, I don't want to do that anymore.
That's it. Yeah, sure. But you're of course trying to hit the mainstream.
Yeah, absolutely. Market. And it may well be that, for instance, with Molly Makes, another of our magazines, they hit the trends really quite early. So Simply Crochet was actually launched as a kind of a place where people who'd learned to crochet with Molly Makes could then get more crochet.
Wow, okay.
They decided that was their craft, or one of their crafts. That was kind of the next stage on for them. So it's the magazines hit the trends at different places as well.
Okay, depending on the magazine and
it's, you'll also get different trends from of course what people are looking for in mainstream to what people are looking for if they are particularly competent and, you know, experienced knitters perhaps, or crocheters, or whatever craft, you know, they will most likely be looking for different things. So it's an interesting process trying to get that right.
I could imagine. I imagine that's probably not easy. So just because I've got you here, is there something coming up that's potentially going to be a trend that you can share with us? Or
that's a really interesting one. I think that we might see This is a bit of a strange one in yarn, actually. I'm not sure how that's going to work, but I think in some industries, I think we're going to see a bit more monochrome with brides next year. I think it's going to be, or in fact, it's already sort of starting to hit, where it's quite funny because it's I remember wearing those things in the 80s, you know. I think we are going to see that monochrome and brights coming around and neons, that type of thing.
Love it. I will look out for that, and I know that you were like ahead of the trendsetter. Well, you
this is the thing, isn't it, when you've been around a little while, there are so many things that you just see coming around again.
I mean it's really true. It's like I met up with a friend yesterday and he was wearing a turquoise shell suit and I was like,
wow,
I used to wear that as like as a kid. when did that become a thing again? So
well, I heard it here first, so
yeah, look at that. I love that. I'm just mindful of time.
Yes.
Does anybody have any questions? Now's a great time to pop a question in the feed that we can throw at Deborah and and see what she has to say. It's a really great opportunity to ask your industry expert question. So I'd encourage you to. In the meantime, what I know in the email that we were chatting earlier this week, and you mentioned a few kind of projects coming up. With actually Shapiers, our sponsor. Are you allowed to say anything on that, or is that top secret?
I can give you a little sneak peek.
Is this like a Shapiers Lounge exclusive?
As long as nobody tells anybody, I'm sure it'll be fine.
Do you need to share the screen?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know if that's possible.
I don't know if it is.
Yeah, I think only the host can do that, unfortunately.
I wonder if, okay, well, perhaps if I look at answering a couple of questions, I'll see if I can.
Let me, you're going to have to multitask then, sorry, I threw that one at you.
No.
Don't worry if not. Let me ask you a question then, because we've had a few come in. So how do you decide what patterns to include in the magazine?
That's also quite a complex process. Quite often, in that, of course, you want to be featuring yarns that are available for people to buy. You want to be featuring things that are seasonally appropriate. I mean, we are available to buy all over the world, the magazines, but we are a UK magazine, so we tend to try and concentrate on the UK in terms of seasons. And then it's making sure, I suppose, that there's, we're trying to have a good balance between the types of pattern that you're including. So whether you are a magazine where you're mostly garments, where you might want to include some cardigans, some jumpers, some shorts, so that you're trying to include something for everyone. So it's that kind of thing, and technique as well, where largely we wouldn't put out a magazine which was all cable or all texture or all fair isle.
Really trying to create a variety there.
Yeah, that
I imagine that when you send out your mood boards type commissioning kind of emails, I imagine that's based on trends. You would get sometimes quite a lot of similar ideas. And I probably wouldn't want a magazine full of, as you said, just cabled sweaters.
No, that's right. And you know, quite often when people send in ideas, which are, you know, it's always fabulous, and it's one of the most fun parts of the process. You see things that come in. You'll look at those and perhaps what's right for one issue. I mean, if it's not right for this issue, it'll be right for a different issue.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a jigsaw from that point of view.
I bet. Deborah, I've just had a message saying that we can share the screen if that's any good.
Oh, okay.
We can. It's been switched on.
Okie doke. Oh, I can see it. I'll give it a go. So,
I really put you on the spot there, didn't I? I do apologize.
No, don't worry. Can you see that?
No.
Sorry, I'm not very good on Zoom either. So. Oh,
no, there we go. Look at this. Someone's ready for Christmas.
Yes. So this is a Sarah Hatton pattern that's going to be in Simply Knitting 205.
Which
wow. Sale in November, which is in Riverwashed.
That is gorgeous.
Lovely oversized cardigan there. Quick for the very good knitters amongst you. Then we have this, which is a Fair Isle set from Mary Henderson in the Knitter, which will be on sale 12th of November.
Look at her, she's cozy and purple.
It's lovely, isn't it? That's Metropolis, I believe.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, that's pretty. Gorgeous. Mary's so good with the fur on. And oh, this one's a bit smaller for some reason.
But you can see those kind of gorgeous kind of cables going on.
Absolutely beautiful. So that's yes. In the Knitter 156. So that's on sale 15th of October. So that one's coming up fairly soon. And I think it's actually a long cable cardigan. It's a coat, I suppose. Coatigan, if you will.
Yep.
And that's in stonewashed XL.
Stunning. Look at that, everyone. That is a sneak peek of what's to come. Like, don't tell anyone, but you've had an world exclusive.
World exclusive, then.
World exclusive. So Deborah, I've got one final question I'm going to ask. As I said, mindful of time, and I don't want to take your whole day. Emma wrote, "What this is interesting actually. What's the balance now then between digital and print magazines?"
It's a great question actually. It's something where we're finding a little bit of a shift at the moment, where more people are moving towards digital magazines.
Is that due to the pandemic?
Absolutely.
Not coming out as much
due to the situation, but actually currently print magazines are probably still our main channel, I suppose.
Yeah. Do you think that's to do with the kind of nostalgia, maybe not nostalgia, but I love a magazine. I like to flick through the pages and
absolutely. I think magazines are a tactile experience.
Yeah.
And when you have them in front of you, and they're portable as well, which again, maybe not quite so, I mean, so digital magazines, of course, but it depends on how you access them. If you have them on your tablet, then of course it's very portable.
Yeah.
But I think that just being able to have them open on your knee while you're knitting or crocheting or whatever people do still like that, I think.
Yeah, sure, totally.
So,
very interesting. So do you imagine that will continue to shift, or do you think that will remain quite?
I think it might shift. It might continue that slowly. And it depends on the magazines as well. Some audiences are more inclined to be happy to buy digital magazines than others.
Yeah, depending on the magazine, yeah, as well.
Oh, just to reply to you, Carol, because I'm also not very technical. I can't quite sort that out. But yeah, designers seem to just be endlessly creative.
Totally. Do you know, it's amazing having Yarndale. I know it's online and stuff, but being able to connect with all of you guys, all of this creative energy, isn't it so special?
Mm,
especially after a few months of, you know, things being a little bit dodgy. It's very special to do this. Deborah, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
Lovely having a chat, learning stuff, and just sharing your energy.
Thanks to everyone for coming and saying hello as well. That's just wonderful.
And I hope I get to see you sometime real soon in the flesh.
Absolutely.
A bit of Yarndale next year, at least.
It could be. I hope so.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I'm going to say goodbye to everyone and stay safe.
Absolutely. Bye.
Bye.